This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. After pledging to never make an album of Christmas songs, my guest, roots and rockabilly musician J.D. McPherson, broke that promise, and I'm really glad he did. His album, Socks, features his original holiday songs, and they're really fun. Last year, after it was released, McPherson and his band came to our studio with their instruments to play some of those new Christmas songs and talk about music and other things. We're going to listen back to that on this Christmas Eve. McPherson is a songwriter, singer, and guitarist who is described by music critic Ann Powers as a supreme rock reinventor. McPherson grew up far away from the hubs of the music world on a cattle ranch in Oklahoma. His father runs the ranch, his mother is a preacher. Before becoming a full-time musician, McPherson taught art for 4 years to students in middle school. His Christmas album, Socks, is his fourth album. Welcome, all of you, to Fresh Air. It's so exciting to have you here, and the new Christmas album is great. JD, I'm going to ask you to introduce the first song and to introduce the members of the band.
Certainly. So my name's JD McPherson, and over to my left is everybody else. That's Doug Corcoran, the utility guy, plays everything. Jimmy Sutton on bass. Ray Hasildo plays keys, background vocals, and our friend Jason Smay on drums.
Though Jason isn't here, I should say.
That's correct. He's too loud.
We're not going to be hearing him.
He's too loud. He's in a straitjacket in the other room.
Too loud for our little studio. Okay, do you want to introduce the first song?
Yeah, this is All the Gifts I Need.
Happiness is automatic. There's music in the air. Grab the boxes from the attic and haul them down the stairs. Freezing weather's round the corner and everybody knows.
Oh, 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 oh.
Soon the tree will be all lit up, sparkling as it goes. Today's anything but the same old thing. I can almost hear those sleigh bells ring. Singing all those happy songs while the little ones alone. I take a real quick look around and suddenly I see it's not even Christmas yet. I got all the gifts I need. Got caught hanging the mistletoe. Somebody stole a little kiss. I ain't tied a single bow, but I can already cross love off my list. I take a real quick look around and suddenly I see it's not even Christmas yet. I got all the gifts I need. I take a real quick look around and suddenly I see it's not even Christmas yet. I got all the gifts I need.
Thank you so much for performing that. That is so great. And this is in our studio. We heard J.D. McPherson on vocals and guitar, Jimmy Sutton, bass and guitar, and also singing backup vocals, Doug Corcoran and Ray Hasildo. And that is one of the songs that's also featured on J.D.'s new album, which is called Socks. And it's an album of original Christmas songs. And it's really fun, just like the song we just heard. So there's another Christmas song I'd like you to do, and it's called Ugly Sweater Blues. And a lot of people intentionally wear ugly sweaters to Christmas parties, really hideous ones. So did you have any like ugly sweater traditions or real ugly sweaters that you were forced to wear?
Well, it was more of, so, you know, I'm a child. I have three older brothers and an older sister, and they were all out of the house when I was born. I was a big surprise. So it wasn't really sweaters, but my parents put me in these like a velvet like tuxedos and like little ruffled pirate shirts and things like that. And there's all these really unbelievable pictures of me with this bowl haircut with these tuxedos and things. And, you know, I was 3 or 4 at the time, so it didn't bother me. But it's humiliating, right? For everybody has some point where they're being forced to wear clothes that they don't really want to. So ugly sweaters, I think everybody, even if you haven't worn them, that's a thing that you can always relate to, that at some point your parents are going to make you wear something you don't want to wear.
I know the feeling. I knew the feeling. All right. Can you do that song for us?
Mm-hmm.
So this is J.D. McPherson and his band performing in our studio. We're going to hear J.D. on guitar and vocals, Jimmy Sutton on bass. Doug Corcoran is going to be playing steel guitar, and Ray Hasildo chimes. So here we go.
Mama, don't make me wear that old thing again. Hand-knitted Christmas trees and a silly snowman. No matter if I refuse, I got these ugly sweater blues. Mama, why can't you see I feel like a fool? Green elves with snowflakes and scratchy alpaca wool. Maybe you heard the news, I got these ugly sweater blues. Another year, another sweater, and another holiday soiree. Mama hears the people laughing while the presents are unwrapping. She's not even sorry. Mama, don't make me wear that old thing again. Green elves with sleigh bells and a gingerbread man. Corduroys and pointy shoes, I got these ugly sweater blues.
That sounded great. That's such a great song.
Thank you.
That song is written by J.D. McPherson, who we heard on guitar and vocals. And this is one of the songs that he wrote that's on the new Christmas album, Socks, that he recorded with his band. And thank you for playing this in the studio for us.
This is so much fun. Thank you for having us.
This is so much fun for me. So, J.D., I want to ask you a little bit about your past, because you grew up on a cattle farm.
Yeah.
In Oklahoma. So, like, describe it for us.
160 acres or thereabouts, an A-frame house that my dad built up on a hill. Southeast Oklahoma is really pretty. I think it's the prettiest part of Oklahoma, mountainous kind of Ozark-type landscape. Registered Brangus cattle, a 1940s Massey Harris tractor, and nothing else to do but to obsess over music and draw pictures.
Did you have to do things on the cattle ranch?
Oh, yeah.
What'd you have to do?
Well, you have to feed them, first of all, and that was kind of, I think that's probably the best description is waking up at 5 in the morning before school and putting out a round bale or meal and salt mix for the cows and everything. That's an early day for a teenage kid.
So you had to do that?
Yeah.
And did you have to shovel anything?
No, there's plenty of room. You don't have to worry about it too much.
Okay.
Just watch where you're walking.
My knowledge of like cattle is kind of like cattle drive westerns, like the TV series Rawhide.
No.
Nothing like that.
No, you just kind of call them and they come up.
Really? Like you call them
yeah.
and they come?
Oh, yeah.
What's the cattle call?
Oh, I can't do it here because it's so loud, but it's kind of like, woo!
Wow.
Yeah.
So you said there's nothing to do except obsess on music. So what music were you obsessing on early on?
Well, so when my brain sort of turned on was my older brothers were teenagers in the 70s, and so their music was kind of guitar rock, classic rock, they call it nowadays. Cream, Hendrix, Led Zeppelin, etc. And I was interested in it, and I was interested in guitar. And so my older brother, John Aaron, would teach me a thing here and there. And the more I kind of listened to these things, I guess became curious about what they were listening to. I mean, I couldn't stop listening and reading because it was so difficult to get music. I would have to call, like the mall in Fort Smith, Arkansas, and place an order for 3 CDs that I just read about in the Cream magazine that I bought the last time I was in Fort Smith. So it was like this constant sort of mining. And, you know, you read things and you find out that, you know, Robert Plant was into Benny Joy and the Everly Brothers and Little Richard. And so, I don't know, when I kind of stumbled on that stuff, that was kind of a really big deal. I just remember asking my brother also if he, I started getting into kind of punk rock music and asking my brother, hey, John Aaron, you were around in the 70s. Did you ever listen to punk rock? And he said, no. So that was the twain. We split up there.
So you mentioned punk rock. Did you start in a punk rock band?
Yeah. So me and my friend Mitchell had 3 bands with the same, just the same 2 members, basically. My nephew eventually, we taught him how to play bass, so we had a trio. But we played 2 shows. One of them was canceled. that was John Sparks's backyard. Cowboys don't really like X and Buzzcocks and stuff like that.
Right, you had no audience.
Right.
Oh,
but
yeah.
We worked so hard on it.
Oh, gee, that
we
must
made
have been
flyers.
That must have been so discouraging. You love this music, and there's nobody to listen to it with.
Not really.
To play
for. It was just fun. It's just a good thing to do, and when you're idling, your idol setting at 14, 15 years old is frustration. So you just do stuff because you're supposed to do it. And it's like you against the world, and so that's what we did.
No, since we're talking about Christmas, because you have a new Christmas album,
mm-hmm.
I think that your first Telecaster guitar was a Christmas gift?
Yeah, it was actually a Stratocaster, which is weird because I immediately shifted into being a Telecaster guy after that. But that was the best thing that I could have ever received. I mean, it was like, it was just the right time. I worked really hard.
What time was it?
It was like probably 15.
Age 15?
I think it was 15.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't expect to get it, and I had got all my presents, and I was really grateful for all of them. And then all of a sudden, my brother brings in this white. You know what it was? It was the same guitar that Wayne had in Wayne's World that he wanted to buy. And he said, oh, yes, it will be mine. It literally said Wayne's World on the back of the guitar neck. Like, it was the guitar made for that movie. I was so stoked to have a real electric guitar. So, but then I discovered Joe Strummer and Keith Richards and Chrissy Hynde all had Telecasters, so I wanted to do that instead.
So when you were growing up on a cattle farm, was it hard to get into town or to go to a store? It sounds like you had to call stores and shopping malls in another state in order to find music.
Yeah, I mean,
isolated.
It was really isolated. The nearest supermarket was about a 45-minute drive. I mean, there's like little country stores here and there, but my folks would do their shopping in like McAllister, Oklahoma, or whatever. Very isolated. Nearest neighbor was 2.5 miles away, dirt road.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did you vow one day I'm going to be in New York?
Well, I wanted to go to Tulsa. My sights were much smaller. we used to go shows in Tulsa, and there's a really important venue there called Caden's Ballroom. And I saw, you know, all my first concerts there. It's such an important place. And I knew that the Sex Pistols had played there and Hank Williams had played there.
Uh-huh.
So that was like, I wanted to be in Tulsa.
So when did you start getting interested in rockabilly?
So, some of those some of those punk bands that I was into would do, would once in a while, like, okay, for instance, The Clash on London Calling, they did a song called Brand New Cadillac, which was a cover of a rockabilly tune. There was a couple of bands that did covers of Eddie Cochran's Something Else. It was like pretty apparent that earliest expression of rock and roll was a big influence on the 70s punk rockers, because they were like, we're tired of 15-minute, you know, synthesizer solos and stuff. Let's just get it back to kind of street music. And so it appealed to me in that way. But at the same time, there was really great musicianship on those early rock and roll records, because you had drummers like Earl Palmer, guitar players like Hank Garland, Grady, I mean, all these incredible musicians sometimes playing with 17-year-olds who couldn't play their instruments on the same record. And I just, all of that really appealed to me. It was like mashing all of these worlds together and making something really exciting. So I guess that's why.
Can we hear another Christmas song?
Yeah, what are we doing?
Okay, so let me suggest one. How about Bad Kid from your new Christmas album, Socks? Can you all play that for us?
Yeah.
And the musicians here are in the studio with me, and it's J.D. McPherson and his band, and we're hearing Jimmy Sutton on bass. And Doug, what are you playing on this?
Baritone guitar.
Okay.
Doug plays a lot of instruments. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Christmas time is a time to be good, but baby, I'm a bad, bad kid. A stocking full of kerosene, matches and wood, I guess I'm just a bad, bad kid. Government surveillance since I started to walk, ain't no telling what I did. I like to think I'm just misunderstood, but you know I'm just a bad, bad kid. Told Mama last Christmas Eve, you know we got a bad, bad kid. He's got a black leather jacket in a real mean street. I guess he's just a bad, bad kid. He knocked off a Macy's and my uncle's antiques, hocked him for a 49 quid. He's on a one-way ticket down a dead-end street, 'cause Mama, he's a bad, bad kid. I can't help it, I was born like this, a permanent spot on the naughty list. I never get a present and a scratch in his head. How the little fella gets so misled.
Jimmy, one of the things you do is play slap bass.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I want you to demonstrate how that sounds for us.
Absolutely. Here, I'll give you two of my favorites. This is going to be a combination between, how about Willie Dixon and Bill Black.
So it's turning the bass into a bass and a percussion instrument at the same time.
Yeah, basically, yeah. First time I heard slap bass was, I was real young, and it was on an episode of Rawhide. I can't remember who was playing it. For some reason in my head, I thought it was Roy Clark, but I don't know if he plays acoustic bass.
So when you're playing slap bass, where are you slapping? What are you...
Oh, well, I'm slapping over the fingerboard towards the bottom, and I'm playing gut strings right here, too, and they tend to sound a little better than all steel strings. But I'm here. This is a single pull. And this is a slap. I'm slapping down with my hand. Pull in, slap in. And then you can do all kinds of tricks.
Great. And, you know, some of the early rock and rollers used their bass as part of the choreography. Like they put it under their legs or spin it around. Have you done that kind of stuff on stage?
I used to do it all.
Really?
I used to do it all, and yeah, I used to surf it, stand on it, lay on it. You know, it was just ridiculous. It was a lot of fun, but you know, that was in my maybe my 20s, teens. It started in my teens, sure.
This is Fresh Air, and if you're just joining us, we're doing music in our studio today, and my guests are J.D. McPherson, who is a songwriter, singer, and guitarist, and members of his band. And their new album is an album of original Christmas songs written by J.D. The album is called Socks. But we're also hearing them play some music that isn't Christmas music, and that is the case, not Christmas music, with the next song I'm going to ask you to do, which is called Jubilee. Hmm. And performing in our studio on this song will be J.D. on guitar and vocals, and Jimmy Sutton on bass. Doug Corcoran is going to be playing baritone guitar, and Ray Hasildo is going to be on chimes. And before we hear it, J.D., introduce the song for us. Tell us about the inspiration for the song.
Jubilee, we're making the last record, and I had this kind of chord progression started, and I worked on this one with Ray, actually. And the lyrics were written, I think, almost like overnight. I wrote it for the next day's session, which is kind of a habit I have. And anyway, I just remember reading about I was looking in a book about Western clothes. I have this book called How the West Was Worn, and it's like fascinating to me. Anyway, there was something, I just saw the word Jubilee, it popped out, and I mean, wrote it right there. It was really, once you get this kind of spark, sometimes they come really quickly. I wish they always did. They don't always, but yeah, this is Jubilee.
But in this song, Jubilee is a person. It's a woman.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Can you play it for us?
From Western clothes to a song about a girl. Here we go.
I hang around while the music's playing. I see the joyful look on every face. I try to listen to words they're singing, but nothing ever fills this empty space. You're the only thing that stirs up any feeling in me. Jubilee, why you gotta strike me down? I shatter into pieces when you come around. Could you ever feel the same? You were always stronger than me. Jubilee, when you sip that glass of wine, swaying in the party lights and feeling fine. When you're buzzing like a bee, think of me, Jubilee. Think of me, Jubilee. Think of me, Jubilee. Think of me, Jubilee.
So that was just an excerpt of the song Jubilee.
Yeah, that was the abbreviated version.
Right.
Because it's a very long song. For us, 5 minutes is very, very long.
So we talked a little bit about growing up on a cattle ranch.
Mm-hmm.
You taught school before you were a professional musician. You taught eighth grade. You were fired from eighth grade teaching. So was I.
Really?
You lasted 4 years. I lasted 6 weeks. So
oh, wow.
I have the edge over you.
I want to know what you did.
Everything wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't
I
keep the kids
too.
In the classroom, let alone teach them anything. But why were you fired?
Well, really, there's actually a little bit of a legend perpetuated by a big rock magazine that I was fired for giving a 15-year-old boy a Bad Brains CD. That's true. I did give him the Bad Brains CD, but the reason I was fired is because I was a terrible employee.
In what sense?
I'm not good at wallowing in the mire of administrivia. I'm not good at office politics. I'm not good at relating to other adults. In fact, I'm actually much better with the kids. I'm essentially 13-year-old, mentally anyway. So I'm just kind of, we can relate to each other. But
Is administrivia your word?
I think I've heard that word before.
Oh, I haven't. I like it. I like it.
Yes, I invented that word, Terry.
Now, you also, one of your first album, in fact, is called Signs and Semiotics.
Close.
Signs and signifiers. Signs and signifiers are part of the definition of semiotics, which is using signs and signifiers and symbols to understand how meaning is derived from the text.
Mm-hmm.
And the semioticists who invented came up with a very arcane language to deconstruct mm-hmm. different art forms. Why did you study that?
Well, I was in art school for a long, long time. I got my my bachelor's at the University of Oklahoma in experimental film and video art. And then I got my Master of Fine Arts at the University of Tulsa in what they called open media, which was everything. I went crazy over there. I can't believe they let me get away with what I studied everything from installation to painting to card magic. And but I'm just saying in 11, 12 years of art school, you're going to have to read Saussure and Roland Barthes and all those things, which essentially teaches you that up is good, down is bad.
So why did you want to name an album Signs and Signifiers?
Well, I always liked language, and I loved that that terminology that you'd see pop up once in a while. I always thought it sounded like a kind of a 20s blues title. Sound like something that maybe Charlie Patton might say, or I don't know. It just seemed to be kind of both. It appealed to my art school sensibility and my love of kind of archaic blues language, I guess. I don't know.
Did you think it sounded vaguely biblical, like the signs and signifiers of hell if you don't?
Yeah, maybe a little of that, yeah. Too. Both my parents are preachers, too, so maybe there's a little of that in there, too.
Well, I was thinking a lot of the blues people, sang about hell,
yeah.
And damnation. So your mother was...
My mother, yeah.
Was a preacher?
Mm-hmm.
What church?
The Word of Life Church in Bache, Oklahoma. She's been a minister for... Well, she's in her 80s now. She's been doing it a long time. It was a big deal because where we lived, that wasn't really, people didn't really like that. And some people, I guess, didn't really like that there was a woman preacher. And she's an incredible lady. She, always supported my music. He kept the cops from shutting us down in McAllister when my little band played our first gig at the public amphitheater.
Why were they going to shut it down?
Because it was loud and bad.
And they don't shut things down for aesthetic reasons. They shut it down for others.
McAllister police, they don't have, there's not a lot going on. So when kids with skateboards show up and distortion boxes and singing songs by people from England, I don't know. They wanted to shut her down. But I just remember my mom. I didn't even know she was there, but she was there, and she went over and talked to him and said, "Let these kids play."
So was your family church the church where your mother preached?
Yeah, yeah.
So you grew up with your mother preaching.
Yeah.
What did she preach? Like, what are some memorable things from her sermon?
Well, it was a non-denominational service. It was really heavy on music. There was a lot of music. I started off drums there. My brother played guitar.
So you played what in your mother's church?
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
What music did you play?
You know, it wasn't like hymns. It wasn't, they were kind of songs written by people, non-published material. It was an interesting place. Like, there was a lot of different kind of, like, I remember, you know, we would bring guys from the Jackie Brennan Correctional Facility to church and got to know a lot of those guys. Some of those guys played in the band. I don't know, now that I look back, you know, it was just church, but, you know, it was a pretty interesting place, actually.
That sounds
yeah.
It. Sing a few bars of one of the songs that you did in church.
I remember my dad used to sing this song called Cover Me that I really liked. And this is literally never. Cover me, cover me. Extend the borders of thy mantle over me. For thou art my nearest kinsman. Cover me, cover me, cover me. Repeat.
That's really nice.
Yeah, yeah.
So did Christmas songs actually have special meaning for you because your mother was the preacher?
Well, living in the countryside, you know, you don't go to the mall very much. You're not inundated, you know, the day of Thanksgiving and beyond with constant Christmas music. It was actually kind of a special thing to go to the city for me. So when I did go and it was Christmas time, it really felt, I think, like maybe what they're trying to make you feel.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to living in the city and it's just everywhere all the time. You know, ever since making this record, we talked about it a lot, and you hear a lot of people saying that they really don't like it. They're just like tired of Christmas music, or it's coming too soon or whatever. That never happened to me, so I always kind of really liked it. I think that maybe that sort of cynicism about holiday music didn't really apply to me in some way.
That's nice.
Yeah, yeah, I like that. I like not being cynical about things.
So when you were fired after 4 years from teaching, was that like a relief for you? Did it open up the door to becoming a musician?
Well,
a full-time musician.
Yeah. Is it okay if I say yes, it was a relief? Every job I ever had, I tried to somehow inject music in there somewhere. I tried to figure out a way to make it about what I really wanted to do. And so when the fourth graders were learning to type, they were typing about the Collins Kids or Charlie Christian. And when they were learning how to make PowerPoints, they were, you know, I showed them the PowerPoint I made about the Clash. And we would have Google search contests where I would play music and press pause, and that's when you stop, or, you know, name the four Ramones, go, you get a piece of candy if you get them, and, you know what I mean? So it was always kind of tiger can't change his stripes, and I'm a rock and roll tiger, man.
So I want to close with another, that is, I want you to close with another Christmas song. There's a song I love from the new album, your new album, Socks, that I'd like you to perform for us. And it's called What's That Sound? And I think everyone in the band is going to chime in on that one.
Yeah. Well, this one, I think, is probably getting down to the root of that anti-cynicism sentiment we were just speaking about. This one's about all of those nice things that you can experience during that time of year.
So this is J.D. McPherson and his band performing in our studio, and the song is What's That Sound? And it's also on their new Christmas album, which is called Socks.
Okay, here we go.
What's that sound at the door I hear? I heard that same merry sound last year. Neighbors are caroling around the town, trying to spread a little bit of joy around. I hear that sound, make me feel so fine. Sounds a little bit like Christmas time. What's that sound? Down the road I hear, I heard that same mighty sound last year. Parade drummers marching out two by two, rocking out the holiday boogaloo. What's that sound? It sounds like Christmas time. If you listen closely now, you'll hear it in the air. That's the What's that sound at the mall I hear? I heard that same busy sound last year. Shoppers are hopping and a humming a tune. A happy holidays and how do you do? What's that sound? It sounds like Christmas time. If you listen closely now, you hear it in the air. That's the sound of Christmas cheer. I hear it everywhere. What's that sound on the roof I hear? I heard that same pitter-pat last year. Jingling bells in big black boots. A rattling chimney and 32 hoods. I hear that sound make me feel so fine. Sounds a little bit like Christmas time. What's that sound down the road I hear? I heard that same ringing bell last year. Ringing that thing like he's leading a band. Trying to give a neighbor a helping hand. What's that sound? It sounds like Christmas time. What's that sound? It sounds like Christmas time. What's that sound? It sounds like Christmas time.
Ding, ding, ding. Oh, that was great. Thank you so much for performing for us in our studio. It's just been wonderful. I wish you all Merry Christmas and great musical things too. Thank you for doing this.
Thank you so much.
Our pleasure.
Our thanks to J.D. McPherson and his band. Their performance was recorded in our studio last year after the release of their Christmas album, which is called Socks. The concert was produced by Amy Sallet and recorded by Joyce Lieberman with help from Al Banks.